Whether you want to escape the snow or plan it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariasmedical.com. That's AREUS medical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The next episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. On the show tonight, our guest is a proud father, husband, lifelong multi-sport athlete, physical therapist, running expert, Kona qualifier, and co-founder and CEO of the Run Cadence app. He could hit a tennis serve over 125 miles an hour and drive a golf ball 300 plus yards plus... We're going to put him to the test on this one. He can make pints of beer disappear, which is why we have to have him on the show. On the PT Pintcast right now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chris Johnson. Chris, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time coming.
If people know me or have listened to the show for any amount of time, they know several of those things in your intro are my things. Physical therapy, multi-sport athlete. I'd love to one day say I was a Kona qualifier. I was a tennis player in high school. I'm a crappy golfer, but I do love pints of beer. So we're on the same page in many different facets. So I've been looking forward to having you on the show. So thanks for taking your time out and talking to us.
Yeah, of course. Anytime you're out in Seattle, you let me know. You have an opening.
Yes. Do like the Pacific Northwest. Made my way out there a couple years ago when we had a month off for PT school. Did some hiking, Mount Baker, Mount Shuckson, just north of Seattle. And then we went up to Alaska. And that was the first time in the Pacific Northwest. And I get why it's cool. But you're not originally from there, are you?
No, I'm originally from Pittsburgh and then went to school at University of Delaware and made my way up to New York City and never had any plan. What was funny is I used to dream about living in the Pacific Northwest when I was younger, and I just see images of these, you know, amazing trees and mountains, and sure enough, I met my current wife, and she's from Fremont, which is one of the neighborhoods on the outskirts of Seattle, and we decided to pack up and walk away from, you know, a lot of great memories and friends in New York, but to start a life and to settle down. And, you know, we have a 9-month-old daughter, and that sort of validated the decision.
And I've noticed, just because we'll get to it, a lot of your YouTube videos, since you've been to the Pacific Northwest, you've grown also the beard.
Yeah, well,
you have to.
A lot of times it's lazy, but, you know, I think I scare people out here a lot because I'm very direct, you know, and that's just... That happens automatically when you're in New York City. So people are like, why the beard? I'm like, oh, I wear my Teva sandals, grow a beard, and pretend like, you know, I don't care so much so I can fit in. Yeah. And no offense to anyone. It's funny. It's a very different culture, and it was a big transition coming out here, largely because I had to go back to work for someone, and I'm not really employable these days. The dust has settled three and a half years later, and, it's been a fun chapter to open.
Well, cool. First question is always the hardest on the show. What are we drinking tonight?
Oh, so I have a...
Pacific Northwest is known for some good beers.
It's from Wonder Brewing. This is actually the first time I've had this. They're in Bellingham, which is where Western Washington is. And it's a Shoe Toss Rye India Pale Ale.
Yes.
And, you know, for anyone who hangs out with me, they always joke and they say, you know, what are you drinking? And they know my response is whatever has the highest alcohol.
Yeah. So where are we at with that one?
Okay, so this is 6.8.
Yeah.
So, and I would say that's actually mid-range for a lot of these beers out here. What do you have?
I'm going Dogfish Head, which actually we have one of the restaurants not far from me in Alexandria, Virginia. I'm going to Dogfish Head Namaste White Belgian Style, and this is only 4.8, so you got me on the alcohol content right there.
Well, and they're usually known for higher alcohol.
Yeah, this is a white, you know, the little Namaste. They're probably, you know, a lot of people post yoga doing that one.
Yeah, that's not good for street cred, Jimmy.
No, it's not.
Actually, studying for the boards when I was at University of Delaware, and I would go to Iron Hill Brewery, and I remember the one night they had a 120-minute, they sort of had a cask party where I think a lot of local brewers came in. I remember the studying didn't go too well that night. I had about 3 or 4 pints, and, you know, I'm like stumbling home. So
nice. Well, let's get to it, because beer has a connection with a big part of your story, which is you're doing something or you've done something that's spreading now, which is the creation of an app. You saw an issue and you said that there's a way, there should be a way for us to help people with technology, and beer played a part in that, because in your story, it started over some IPAs, Trail Gnome IPAs, to be exact. So yeah, talk to us a little bit about what's the app called, and what's it do, and how'd you decide to come up with it?
So the app is called Run Cadence, and if you go to runcadence.net, that's the website specific for the app. And I also just relaunched my chrisjohnsonpt.com site, and there is a tab allocated to the app. The first person who I connected with when I came out to Seattle was a fellow named Ben Walker. And Ben is just a poster child as far as the APTA goes. I mean, this guy's a class act, and you know, he's busy as can be, but made time to connect with me. It turns out we'd become friends, and you know, he was having a 40th birthday party over at Chainline Brewery, which is in Kirkland, again, on the outskirts of Seattle. You know, we both got to chatting, and you know, we were saying how all this research is coming out, and it, you know, if there's a home run in the literature as far as running goes and addressing common running related injuries, it's through step rate manipulation, or what most folks know as cadence. You know, it's a simple variable to look at. Most of the recreational distance runners that come in to see us, you know, benefit from just turning their feet over faster. So the whole idea is you keep the running velocity the same and you increase the number of contacts. Okay, so you're going to have more loading cycles, but you're reducing the magnitude of each individual loading cycle.
So you're spreading the weight out over more touches.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, we see a lot of knee complaints. So, you know, one of the things that Brian Heiderscheidt and his colleagues have shown out of University of Wisconsin is a 5% increase in step rate while keeping running velocity constant leads to a 20% reduction in energy absorption at the level of the knee.
That's real big.
Yeah. I mean, it's astronomical. So it's something that's simple. People are aware. Well, when you bring up cadence, most people think of 180, right? And that's a little bit reductionist. Lacey Lutke's done some work, and you know, I would say if you're in the low 170s, you're probably okay. Not to say that you may not benefit from turning your feet over faster, but yeah, I think to just chalk it up to 180 is a little bit of an oversimplification. So anyways, we got to talking, and next thing we know, we start meeting over bringing this to fruition. And Seattle is just, you know, tech central. So, you know, there's a lot of really talented people out here, and we connected with a group, and it's an interesting problem to solve. So, you know, and we're just getting started with this, but, you know, we wanted a simple external cue that makes use of current technology, you know, that way we can start helping runners. But we didn't want it to do too many things. I think a lot of this stuff starts to get overwhelming.
Right.
You know, this is a simple thing. You know, it's like if you watch any kids put on music, they start dancing to it, you right. know. And what the research shows on this stuff is that you auto-entrain to music, especially as an endurance athlete. So it's no wonder everyone's running around with their iPods and their iPhones. Yeah, we just basically put this together, and you know, it's a matter of just making sure that we educate clinicians and runners on the benefits of it, because a lot of times that can make or break. And again, there's no panacea to anything. It's an important consideration when you're working with runners.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That stat you just had there, 20% reduction. That's a big change. So what does the app actually do? How does it work? I mean, I know it's available on Apple devices, including the new Apple Watch, which is big because a lot of the multi-sport athletes, we love toys and we love technology. So what does it do when I download it on my iPhone?
It'll pull up a screen, and the first thing is you have to determine what your step rate is.
Okay.
So what we're doing is making use of the accelerometer. We're saying, look, the arms and legs are synchronized, opposite arm, opposite leg. If we look at arm swing, that's going to give us a reflection of step rate.
Okay.
What you do is, you know, the easiest way to do it as a clinician is to put someone on a treadmill. You know, obviously, treadmill and overground running aren't identical, but, you know, look, it's a practical way to get a window into someone's running. So you have them take it up, and we just tell people, take it up to what a moderate intensity run would be, you know, where they're spending most of their time training. And it basically does a 1 minute test, and then it shows you what your step rate is. And I've tested this thing on so many fronts, and the accuracy and reliability is just scary in a good way. It'll give you your step rate, and then it'll calculate to show you what plus 5% is, plus 7.5%, and plus 10%.
And you're saying that plus 5 is where you've seen that 20% reduction.
Correct. Yeah. So And what we know through the research is the sweet spot's 5 to 10%. Once you go above 10%, it occurs at a greater metabolic cost. So as we say, the juice isn't worth the squeeze.
Yeah, I love that phrase.
Yeah. And you also, you don't need to just take someone right up to 5, you know. Take them up 2.5% and let them adopt it, okay? And then, you know, like Christopher Walken says, sometimes a runner may just need more cowbell.
Yeah, give a little more beeps.
Yeah, so, but you know, when people hear this, they'll just automatically sync up to it. When they manipulate all these variables independently, and I don't want to get too scientific here, but cadence is a cue that we use to reduce step length, and that's the important piece, okay? And that's ultimately where the benefits come in.
So the app will figure out your step rate, but now how do I adopt that into my running?
So what you can do is when you once you figure out your step rate and you want to go out for a run, you'll see on the home window, it says learn and then run. If you're going to go out for a run, you can use the Apple Watch or a lot of people. I don't personally run with a handheld device. You know, some people put a strap on their arm. You plug in that step rate, which if you hit plus 5%, it'll automatically set that. If you fall out of a small window, the metronome will kick back on. So it's facilitating a learning
okay.
response.
So is the metronome only playing when you're out of that window?
Bingo.
Okay. So it's not covering up, it's not constant, it's not there the entire time. Can I still hear my music over it?
No, you'd go crazy, man.
I would go nuts. Honestly, that's the only thing keeping me sane is downloading a new song or two.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things that you can use in conjunction with this, but a lot of the other apps that are out there, they may not be as reliable. And again, they start hitting you with too many different metrics, and it's like, let's just keep it simple. It's overwhelming for folks.
Yeah, you're saying there's one thing we can, if there's one thing we can change to reduce that much force and that much load, it's cadence. Let's just do that. Let's not add too much to it.
Yeah, correct. And there are other apps out there, I mean, that look at braking force, vertical oscillation. And look, there's the research lends credence to those. But we were just trying to tackle one thing because, again, with most of the recreational distance runners, it's an easy thing for them to adopt.
To reduce. Cool. And again, the website is runcadence.net. You can find it on the app store. Just check out Run Cadence. I think it's a cool app. I just downloaded it about a week and a half ago, and I'm going to take my test and figure out what my rate is and figure that out so I can actually get my ass out there and run through the winter so I don't just get huge drinking beers and interviewing people.
And the other thing that, you know, I think it's important to appreciate is that when we're in the clinic and we say, look, we want you to do 3 sets of 10 or whatever the set and rep scheme is, and this is a lot of Ebony Rio's research, how are you controlling for the rate at which they're doing an exercise?
That's a good point.
If someone's working with folks who are dealing with a lot of tendon pathology, this app, I think people just think of it specific to running. There's so much more that you can do with it. So again, I'll have people just hold it and stay in sync whenever they're doing an exercise. And it's a simple way to ensure that they're doing it with some objectivity.
I like it. Now, you've got a YouTube channel that I just want to admit that I've stolen a bunch of the exercises that you put up there and used them with my patients. How would you use some of those exercises? Because I have an idea just because I've seen some of them. How do you use some of those exercises? Or what are good exercises to use to bring people up, like you said, slowly? You don't just make them go right to 5%. So what are some of the really good videos that you've got on there that you might give to someone?
Well, I think that at day's end, and this is all heavily influenced by the pain science literature, you know, when people, I've gotten pigeonholed into a lot of running and a lot of slow motion stuff. And I say, well, look, I'm dealing with a lot of folks, you know, again, I'm taking care of a lot of performance coaching athletes. I deal with a lot of runners who come to see me to address pain and functional limitations. So the reason I slow things down is I'm trying to mitigate threat to that person. All right. If someone's coming in and, you know, their knee is irritable, you can't take them into like A skips and B skips. You have to slow things down, break them into parts. If we talk about the app, you know, if I have someone do a marching drill, I'll set it at 30 beats a minute. Okay. If they're tolerating that and they're staying in sync, then I may take it to 45, and I'm monitoring their symptoms, but I'll get people up to 135 and they naturally will start hitting the ground harder. So, you know, again, it's just slowly pushing them. We have to keep pushing runners along because at day's end, we have to get them back to skipping and hopping because that's ultimately, I mean, running is bounding from one leg to the next in a balanced manner. So again, it's slowing things down and then increasing the speed, the complexity, the amplitude, the duration of an exercise. So, and that's pain science. Laura Mermozzi's written a couple great articles and maybe I'll shoot a diagram to you that sort of does a nice job summarizing that.
Yeah, we could put that up at ptpinecast.com to go with the chaser for this episode. We'd love to have that. But that's what I was trying to get you to say, was those particular exercises. As a PT student and as a new grad, you know, I've been a PT for about 6 weeks now officially. That's some of the exercises that I was trying to get you to talk about, which is the marching to a specific beat per minute. And I remember looking at it going, well, this is ridiculous. Why would this help? And then it's exactly that neural approach, which is taking something apart, making sure you can do the really simple version right before I make you go to 135 beats per minute. And then I sat there and thought, well, like, this is so, it's so brilliant. It's so simple.
Well, yeah. And the thing that's, and I appreciate that. And by the way, you're not stealing any of this. I wouldn't put it up. What's funny, this is me. When I put these videos up, you know, everyone says, oh, why are you putting them up for free? I say, well, I'm trying to figure out the exact graded exposure model from A to Z. And understand, some people you may plug in with doing step-ups right off the bat. Other people, you may have to take them to a non-weight-bearing exercise. And sometimes it may just be getting them to exercise that helps.
Right.
You know? So again, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know. So, you know, I try not to speak in absolutes, but with all of those exercises that I put up, that's me playing around with things. With the marching in particular, what you'll notice is that once you get up to 150, I would say when I get to about 160, I start to naturally adopt a float phase.
Yeah, you've got to.
Yeah, you have to. One of the things I always say with runners is running is about rhythm and time, and you need to have a certain tissue capacity, and you know, and that's built over time. But I felt like I went to a phenomenal PT program at University of Delaware, but I think with any PT program, they have to cram in so much to prepare you for the boards ultimately. Therex, I think they sort of just say, well, you'll learn that on your fills.
Yeah, we hear that a lot.
I've taken a lot of these videos now, and I organize them on my chrisjohnsonpt.com site, which I just relaunched. It was hacked right before I left New York a few years back. Use them. It's a free resource. I put it out there for people to share that with their clients, and that's why I also don't get too... I talk in some of them, but I want you to plug in your own verbiage, because we all explain things in a different manner.
Yeah. So. As a guy who used to work in journalism and marketing and communication, one of the real subtle reasons I liked your videos is you call it something, slow marching, 35 beats per minute. There's really no introduction. You don't talk and you don't set it up. You just do the exercise. You do it, you know, 8 or 9 times. You do it from a couple different angles on some of the videos. And then the video's over. So if I'm looking for something, I don't want to listen to a 60-second explanation. I don't. Yeah. I don't have time for it. We all have short attention spans. And the videos are high-quality camera, so it's not grainy, which, you know, for someone who grew up in the information age, does make me want to look at it. And they're well done. They're short, sweet, and to the point. They do exactly what they advertise with the title, which is a big deal for a YouTube video. And they're done clearly and easily. And you do them well. Kudos to you. So what's that website again? ChrisJohnsonPT.com?
Yeah, and if you just go under the top vid section. And for people who want to learn a little bit more, I'm going to offer a membership platform. And not because I'm trying to make money. It's because I'm getting too many phone calls and emails. I just can't keep up with it. And I want to be a resource for folks, but I also have to be fair to my family. And where I delve into things and say, look, here's a cueing. Here's how you progress it, regress it. I may take someone who is doing the slow motion marching drill, and once they have it down, I may put them under the load of a weighted vest to create axial load, which is very important for runners. When you start practicing these drills, I was concerned at one point I may run out of ideas. It's the last thing I'm concerned about these days, because I just, every time I go to the playground, I start coming up with more and more ideas. And you watch other people in the field. There's so many brilliant people out there, and you sort of get a window into their thought process. And I'm not doing rocket science here, but I'm trying to give exceptional models of performance, and I fortunately have the health and to do that right now.
That's cool. Yeah, ChrisJohnsonPT.com. You mentioned Lorimer Moseley, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the clinical application of pain science. Lorimer being a big name in the pain science world. How do you apply pain science clinically?
I think you have to weave this in. And I think initially anyone who starts to incorporate pain science into the equation, they may start talking in bumper sticker slogans, you know, pain is in your brain, la, la, la. You know, I think that there's some key things to understand. And, you know, when someone comes in, to ask them, what is their understanding of their situation? Let them just talk. You know, I saw a woman last night, and I get to see a lot of people who had failed conservative treatment with other clinicians who trust in me, you know, especially with runners. I need to know what baggage they bring to the table. So I say, you know, bring me up to speed. Tell me what's going on. Totally open platform.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And they start talking. And then you say, well, you know, what's your understanding of your situation? You know, and they may say, look, injured my back. The next question has to be, well, when did you injure your back? And they may say, well, I don't really recall a specific event. And you're like, well, that's pretty cool. It's not like you got hit by a truck or like fell out of a tree, you know? So you slowly just start challenging some of these things that may be inaccurate or they need to have refined, because you want them to arrive at their own conclusions. And I think that we should have more cross-examination courses in PT school. Collecting that subjective is so important, and just listening to people and trying to really put yourself in their shoes. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, understanding, is this someone who's dealing with primary hyperalgesia? Is this secondary hyperalgesia? Or are you dealing with someone who has central sensitization? And that's a critical thing to understand right out of the gates, because that's going to dictate how you approach that person. And these are things that I don't think the pain science move had really hit when I was in school. But I think a lot of times we say things to folks unknowingly, it can make their situation worse.
One of the very first episodes we did on this podcast, one of the first six in the first six pack, was with Karen Litzy, and I gave her any topic to talk about, and she wanted to talk about pain. And I just remember being a third year student at that point, and we hadn't talked about pain. One of the first questions she asked me on my own show was, what do you know about pain? And it wasn't much. And I think the discussion has really started to pick up, or maybe I'm just noticing a lot more. But I've also heard it takes a long time to take an idea or a new movement and get it into the curriculum in PT schools, just because, as you brought up before, we teach to the tests and we've got to make sure people are prepared for the boards. But I hope that eventually this bleeds through, maybe with social media and podcasts like this, that whole pain science approach gets to PT students, because it can help a lot of patients. I mean, my approach now is very, very different when I interview or when I eval a patient. It's very subjective. I hand them the microphone and let them talk for a long, long time. And it's hard for me because I talk a lot. It's hard for me, but I keep my mouth shut and let there be awkward silence and make them fill it, because they're going to tell me more stuff.
I think that's spot on. Just simple questions. You know, I love to ask people, what do you instinctively do to alleviate your symptoms? And they're like, well, I actually do X, Y, and Z. You know, and if that involves movement, you're like, keep doing that. You know, I can show you maybe a couple ways to refine it and to progress a little bit. You know, the last thing we want to do is medicalize someone and foster dependency on us. I think clinicians are always worried that they're going to have folks that don't make follow-up treatments or this and that. But, you know, at day's end, we're there to help people help themselves. And you know what happens if that person has a good experience? People talk.
Right, big time.
They're going to tell their friend. When I start working with clients, I get their friends, I get their family. Then they start looking at all these videos and they're like, this dude's in my corner, you know? And they just start trusting in you. And I have transparency with people. You know, you have to call it how it is. And even if that's not great news, but I think that most people will rebound. And again, it's not a process that you can rush, but just to expose them and open up their minds to some of the loads that may be working on their system that they're not fully appreciating. And stress equals stress.
Yeah. So. You talked about over medicalizing things, and I think that's a good point. I brought this up a couple times in this podcast. I think sometimes people like to grab on to that diagnosis they were given. I've had a blown disc. I really blew up my knee. I mean, I had a patient say, I blew up my knee. My response was, I have no idea what that means. Like, you need to explain to me what you blowing up was an explosive device used on your leg, because they grabbed onto that somewhere along in the healthcare system, and they have a left knee and a blown up knee. I'm like, you have a left knee and a right knee. Your right knee might hurt, but it's not blown up.
And it's good that you're doing that, you know, because I think that when you first get out in the clinic after going through PT school, I think it's sort of trial by fire, you know, but just let people talk. And I learned this when I was in New York. I'll tell you what, since moving out to Seattle, you start to really appreciate what sensitivity means, because I don't see half the weird stuff that I did in New York. And let me explain that a little bit more. New York, you're dealing with financial stressors, You're dealing with crowded spaces. You're dealing with sirens going every 5 seconds. You're dealing with people who, when they say they want to go out and have a drink, they mean 6 drinks. Like, you're out late at night. It's crazy. And all that elicits threat to your system.
Yeah, it stresses the body. Like, literally, that is another stressor on the body.
And if someone comes in, they're like, you know, I was told that I have X, Y, and Z. I'm like, you have lateral knee pain.
Let's start there.
Pain on the outside of your knee. And it just, always thinking of ways to rephrase things and also to create competing ideations for people. Man, you seem like you have a clean bill of health. I think that start to challenge them. And I think people are pretty resourceful. And if you take the time to listen to their story, which no one does, or it's very rare, I think that we can help a lot of people through very simple measures without them getting fixated on minutia nonsense.
I think you're right. All right, we're going to take a quick break with Chris Johnson. When we come back, I got to hear about the Kona qualifier and how the hell you got there. You got to teach me some secrets. I want to figure out how to drop some time. And I want to talk about understanding PT to performance coaching spectrum. Because once we get someone good enough to walk out the door, I want to know what's next. After the break with Chris Johnson on the PT Pinecast, don't move.
We tweet, we post, we snap, we Insta. Online on all social media platforms at PT Pinecast. Introducing EcoPro pillow covers, good for the environment and your clinic's bottom line. EcoPro pillow covers are the clinic pillowcase replacement designed to be wiped clean just like your treatment tables. Each EcoPro pillow cover saves you 2,600 gallons of water per year, time spent laundering pillowcases, and the money involved with clinic laundry, with no special cleaner required. A special deal for Pinecast listeners: when you order online at EcoProPillows.com, you'll get free shipping on any size order with the promo code Pinecast. EcoPro pillow covers, created by PTs for PTs.
Considering a travel assignment over the holidays, or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURIUSmedical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. And we are back on the PT Pinecast. We are talking with Chris Johnson. Chris out on the West Coast. You can find him on Twitter at ChrisJohnsonPT. Got the website ZerenPT.com at ZerenPT.com. And, of course, the Cadence app, the Run Cadence app, which you can find in the iTunes store right now or on the website RunCadence.net. So every episode now we are going and asking all of our guests three questions. Are you prepared for three questions?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. First question from our sponsor, Arias Medical Group. If you could work anywhere in the U.S., where would it be besides New York or Seattle? Because you've done that. So where's somewhere where you haven't worked yet that you would love?
I have worked there. You know, Austin, Texas is pretty cool.
Ooh, keep Austin weird.
Yeah, Austin's fun, man. I wouldn't mind spending some time in Colorado, going to some warmer weather. You know, whether it's the Southwest, you know, California, I think would be fun. But actually, I'll tell you what, Hawaii or Alaska. Yeah, I was up to Alaska to treat. A fellow named Justin Dorn was kind enough to invite me up there and let me run my mouth. And he took me out on a glacier run late at night. It was Alaska. Just, you felt like it was untapped.
That's cool.
Very cool.
That works with our sponsor, Arias Medical. PT's everywhere, man. You can do PT anywhere and you can get there. Second question, what's the last thing that you read or you're currently reading? It can be PT or non-PT related.
Well, right now I'm working my way through Louis Gifford's books again.
Pain science.
Yeah, and you know, he has a great way of explaining things. And you know, I think the more refined, I think life is all about editing and new experiences. So just constantly going back and looking at the way that you're doing things and refining them and simplifying them. Louis Gifford has a 3-book set called Aches and Pains, and that should be required reading by every program as far as I'm concerned.
Cool. Last questions of three questions. Who else in the physical therapy world should we be paying attention to? I think everybody should be watching your videos, Chris Johnson PT. Who else should we be paying attention to?
Oh, that's a great question. So many people come to mind. I'll tell you what, in the running, we'll stick with the running theme.
Okay.
If I was over in the UK, I'd be all over Tom Goom's stuff.
Yeah, the running
Tom,
physio.
Yeah, and Tom's just a class act. I mean, I've had nothing but amazing experiences communicating with him. He's been nothing but supportive. He challenges me and, you know, jabs me when when it's right to. But at day's end, he's like someone we go have a beer with at the end of the day and laugh about it. But and I think we're at similar points in our life, and you know, we're starting to get more and more clarity on things. But you know, hat tip to him. And there's a bunch of people over in the UK who are doing great things. I mean, Adam Meekins is creating a shitstorm, but you know,
that's a great way to put it. And he loves it.
Yeah, he revels in that. You know, and look, I think that whatever. Whatever you enjoy doing, but I think at day's end, he's interested in truths. And I think that upsets a lot of people, but you know, I think that's where, again, where he revels.
Yeah.
And naturally, I mean, you look at someone like Greg Lamb, and he's flying all over the world. Greg's a mad scientist of sorts. So I think there's some young guns in the field.
Well, that list is pretty good right there. You, Adam Meekins, we've had on the show. I have yet to get Tom Goom on the show, but I really do want to get the running physio on there. So maybe I'll just name drop him a bunch of times until he has to show up. Well, cool. All right, you're off the hot seat with three questions from RAS Medical Group, all right?
All right.
Cool. Getting into it, dude, tell me about Kona. That's got to be the coolest thing ever. So in case someone out there isn't knowing what we're talking about, we're talking triathlon, multi-sport talk. Kona is the granddaddy of them all, the first Ironman race. You got to qualify to get in, or you got to hit the lottery. What's it like to actually be there?
Well, it, as the saying goes, qualifying for Kona is more fun than racing Kona.
Really?
Yeah, well, Kona is not – the course itself is not tough. The conditions are insane, though.
Right.
The wind is just really unpredictable. And, you know, I think it's funny when people complain of 70-degree temps when they're running Boston, because in Kona, you're running in, like, 95-degree heat.
Lava fields, man. Lava fields.
Brutal. You know, and as you're running, the kicker is – you're running down like a Leahy Drive and you see all these people body surfing, drinking beers, you know, you're just like, I want to just stop right now and run into the ocean. My plan is to, you know, and get back to Kona. So I have a bare spot on my wall down in the office.
All right. Well, good luck to you, sir.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen by accident.
No, so. It doesn't. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the understanding how to go from physical therapy to performance coaching spectrum. So let's say you've got someone who is a high-caliber athlete. They're a multi-sport athlete, a runner, a cyclist, a swimmer. You've got them where they're not having pain. But what's beyond that? How do you get them to get a little bit faster? How do you use that anatomical knowledge, that PT knowledge, to coach them as a performance athlete?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that getting someone fixated on 0 out of 10 pain and feeling 100% is very misleading. We're held to a higher degree because we go through crazy training that most people aren't really fully appreciative of. So when I was in New York, and I would assume this applies to most states, but you'd have to look at your practice act. In New York, if I was rendering care that was geared towards pain amelioration and functional limitations, and that's what the person is coming to see me for, that's a patient. Once people have basically low level, like I have some shoulder discomfort, I have pain right now, would I go see a PT right now? No. I think that you have to look at this along a spectrum, you know, and realize it's okay for people to have a little bit of pain. You know, we can't just stop everything we're doing just because someone has, because you're going to deal with some pain.
Yes, you are.
That's sort of the whole idea behind it. PTs, that hand ties them a lot. So you just have to really make sure the person's coming to see you. What are they coming to see you for? What does their examination dictate their needs are? Is that consistent with what their specific goals are? And then prioritize from there. But yeah, it is a spectrum though at day's end. If someone comes in and has a calf strain, we need to get them back to walking normally. We need to get them back to stair negotiation. When I discharge people from PT, and also understand you can't flip-flop. I can't render PT the same day I'm rendering performance coaching. So they're either a client or a patient, and that's black and white.
I like that distinction right there.
Yeah, you need to have hard and fast rules because people don't talk about this enough. And this is part of the reason why the insurance companies probably clamp down on a lot of people, because they think we probably, you know, are holding on to folks too long. I'm transparent with the folks I work with and understand their needs, but yeah, at some point, when you're trying to have someone set a personal record, you're putting them on the brink of an injury, but keeping them on the right side of the fence. Performance coaching is walking a tightrope, all right, in a balanced manner. But again, a lot of the same things apply in terms of pain science that we apply to the clinic when we're working with patients. You know, thinking of ecosystem, thinking of how we're what the relevant loads are in their ecosystem. I think the goals start to shift. People are like, it's no longer, they're able to get through their day without any issues. Their priority starts to become, I want to qualify for Boston. I want to crack 10 hours in an Ironman. I think you have to just look at each client, you know, or each person on a case-by-case basis, but also take the time to understand your practice act. This is readily accessible information, and if you can't find it, call up the Office of Professions and find out.
Well, I like that, how you walk that. You mentioned that's a tightrope of getting someone in such good shape that you're close to having an injury if you're going to have them be a performance athlete. You mentioned having some additional content possibly at your website at chrisjohnsonpt.com. What would be some clinical pearls to help runners return to consistent training? What are some things that you've seen that you could share with people?
Right off the top of my head. So Nielsen Rasmussen's work, you know, they tend to show that things are a U-shaped distribution. If you're running once to twice a week, it's not enough to get your tissues conditioned for it. If you're running 6 to 7 and you're not an elite athlete, it's probably going to create a strike against you. So let's say run on non-consecutive days, strength train twice a week, bias towards the lower extremity, run in more than one pair of shoes over the course of a week, prioritize sleep, stress equals stress equals stress. You know, so if you have a hard day at work and, you know, you just feel smoked, that's not the day to go and have a breakthrough workout. I tell all the athletes I work with, consistency is king or queen. If you're not putting in consistent efforts day after day after day, you're just going to end up losing capacity when you get sidelined by an injury. And then what happens, the pain disappears, you're feeling better, and you try to plug back in where you left off, and then you trade one injury for another. But with runners, the important thing to understand is that when runners deal with pain or they have a true tissue injury, they go through an identity crisis because that's largely how they define themselves, and that's, you know, their peer group. You have to really take a multimodal approach to work with that person. But what happens, they go in, they enter the medical system, people think they're crazy, they tell them to stop running, and then it just starts this downward spiral.
It's because a lot of times people just don't want to hear it. When you're sitting across from a patient and you're saying, hey, maybe don't run on non-consecutive days. Yeah, I'm not going to listen to that. Well, maybe prioritize sleep. We know that's a good predictor or a bad predictor if you're not doing it of injuries, but people are kind of like, do they minimize that? Do they just kind of marginalize that and say, well, that can't possibly be why I'm injured? How do you explain that to someone like, if you're not getting enough sleep, you're putting yourself at an increased chance of an injury?
I talk a lot about my own training, and I create the ultimate placebo effect. When people are like, oh, why do you train and do this and that? Because people who are coming to see me, when they walk into the door, chances are I'm coming off the treadmill dripping. I have running shoes all over the place. There's just an inherent trust that enters the equation right off the bat.
They walk in the room and they realize this guy's not talking the talk, he's walking the walk.
Yeah, and I do that for a reason. People are like, oh, why do you train this? You know, it seems like a big commitment. Because I want people to have an uncanny level of trust in me when it comes to helping them improve their decision making with regards to their running. And also to say, look, I'm sitting here drinking a beer. That's fine. You know, it's a blip on the radar. You have to look at all the loads on your system. Just be mindful of them and not become some crazy person, for lack of a better word. You know?
This is the Parting Shot.
So a parting shot of wisdom. If you were just going to give a shot of wisdom to the field of physical therapy, what's one thing that you want to get on your soapbox and make a lot of people listen to?
I would say go hang out with people in all professions.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I think that we get very idealistic. I'm going to create a shitstorm here. But
ooh, good.
I think that, I'll tell you what, I've spent some time hanging out with Ryan DeBell. He's a chiropractor, but he has a business acumen. It's insane, and he's a young guy. You know, but there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of brilliant people, you know, no matter what the field is. So, you know, the other day I was hanging out with these Acro Yoga people. Incredible what they're able to do. I spend time with speed skaters, power lifters, ballet dancers, yogis. Go hang out, rock climb. Just hang out with as many people as you can. And then step back and say, what are the common denominators to their success? I think it'll become pretty clear. It's daily practice. It's auditing things. It's, you know, always looking to improve. It's putting in measured efforts, prioritizing, you know, load management. They're brilliant people, irrespective of what the discipline is.
I mean, so, I think the thing with all those people that you mentioned, speed skaters, yogis, ballet dancers, they all want to move, and they do move. So that's what we're supposedly supposed to be and positioned as movement experts. Why wouldn't we want to hang out with people who move?
Yeah, exactly. Outside of that, trust in the affinity of the body to heal and to adapt. I'm working on a project right now, and I'm writing the foreword. And when I was 16 years old, I went in, I was dealing with some knee pain. I had an osteochondral lesion of my right knee. And I vividly remember that experience because I was told you will never run again and you will need knee replacements at 35. So to bring this full circle, 35 is when I qualified for Kona and I ran my fastest marathon. Like, again, just be present with people. If you're not present with people, check out. Don't waste their time.
I can see that being one of the quotables we use when we promote this episode is be present with people. That's a big one, especially for PTs.
If a patient comes back to see you and you're like, oh, how's your, recount some fact or something that they brought up. And they'll be like, wow, this person actually was paying attention to me. And I have a weird memory. So I just naturally start doing that all the time. Person either thinks you're stalking them, but most of the time they realize that you're there to help them. But
you're paying attention.
Yeah. So they start to trust you because that's what is falling by the wayside in medicine. And the insurance companies are putting a clamp down on people. They're making that aspect of it much more difficult to do.
You can check him out online at ZarinPT.com, on Twitter, Chris Johnson PT. You can also check out his app and download it now. RunCadence.net. You can find it on your Apple devices on the App Store as well. Enjoyed talking to you just because we have a lot of likes, and we figured out in your intro, one of the things we said in your intro is you can make a pint of beer disappear, and you did that several times during the show.
Yeah, well, nothing I'm proud of. Two beers and that's it. But hey, one other thing. I'm going to launch a membership site, which is very reasonable. People tell me I need to be charging more, where I'm going to delve in everything that I've posted over the years, which is me trying to get a handle on things. But so the new ChrisJohnsonPT.com site is up, and it's just a phenomenal resource. I built this thing from scratch, which was an awesome and painful experience, but I'm really pleased with how it turned out, and there's some folks who really helped make that happen. I want to thank you for reaching out and inviting me on your show. You're doing great work, and I applaud all your efforts and your branding slick. Everything that you're doing is spot on, and you know, I've been fortunate enough to join a lot of folks who are, in my estimation, far out of my league. But you had Dr. Galloway, he's one of my instructors, and
love that guy.
Amazing. So I can't thank you enough.
Well, appreciate you having on the show. I'm taking a wild stab, and this won't be the last time.
Excellent. Cool. Thanks, Jim.
What if we summarized every episode we released and gave you links to all of the websites, articles, people, and things that we talked about during each show? Oh, we do that already. Get Episode Chasers for all of our shows available now at ptpintcast.com.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.